Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part 2.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Yahoo.
I am Sean McAnew from The Athletic.
Boy, are you. And you're in Puck Soup. Little did we know, boys, that it would be the end of March in the midst of a playoff race, and a player on a team a country mile outside the postseason would be the biggest name of the week. Drew Doughty, feuding with Makachuk, talking about the Norris Trophy voting. First, let's start with Doughty Tkachuk. Best personal rivalry in hockey right now?
I think it might be. Yeah, it's certainly of the ones that are public, or at least half public. Like, I'm sure there's lots of cases where two guys hate each other and they just kind of deal with it on their own. But as far as just going out of your way to call attention to it, this one would have to be right up there.
We used to have a heyday of these sorts of things. I feel like Ryan Kesler was feuding with half the league at one point.
Oh yeah.
So like, it's good that we have one where there's general animosity. And it was also interesting, Eric Francis, who's not, you know, my favorite reporter, but you know, to his credit, does a good thing where every time Drew Doughty comes to Calgary or the Flames play the Kings, he just sticks a microphone in front of Doughty's face and he's just like,
go.
So Makachuk, go. And at first Doughty's like, oh, you know, he's pretty good at what he does, you know, a little annoying. And then the next time he's like, you know, a lot of my friends in this league don't like the guy. And now it's just like, fuck him. Arr, gargle, gargle, gargle. It's really the escalation of things, and maybe it's just Doughty being pissed off about his lot in life this year, or maybe Makachuk is that damn good as a pest.
I like the "my friends don't like you" thing. That is very, very grade school. It's not just me. Girls. Yeah, my friends you can't hate you too. Here. They just won't say it.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like, I think a lot of the Tkachuk hate, like, that he gets generally is a lot like the Marchand stuff from like 3 years ago when he didn't really play the old Marchand way anymore. And he was also insanely good, but everybody acted like he was just like a pest and that's it.
Right.
Because Matthew Tkachuk's having an awesome season. Like, he's really, really good. And he doesn't really do the kind of shit he did even last year anymore. If you actually sit down and watch a Flames game. And obviously I'm not on the ice with the guy and maybe getting a cross check in the back and a nasty word or any of that kind of stuff like Doughty undoubtedly is. But, you know, it really scans to me as one of those things where it's like, I hate who this guy was 3 years ago and my opinion hasn't changed.
Right. Yeah. It's cemented.
Yeah.
He's always going to be that guy. I mean, you know, the thing about Marchand that's interesting is that gone are the days when he's tilt-a-whirling Sammy Sallow. Like, he's not that guy necessarily anymore to do that sort of shit. I think he's now just more of a, like it, to put it in wrestling parlance, he used to be a high spot guy and now he's just a really good talker. You know what I mean?
Well, but he's also a really good worker, right? Like, he maybe used to have just like he was a Juventud Guerrera type, and now we're talking about wrestling again. But he was a Juventud Guerrera type where he didn't do very much, but man, that 450 kicked ass, right?
Now, hold on. Can we pause for a second? Yeah. In case you guys didn't know, my single favorite moment in the history of Raw was the debut of Chris Jericho. When they did the countdown to the millennium and Jericho shows up, he gets one of the biggest pops in the history of the business. But on that same show, people forget that he had the back and forth with The Rock. That was the first person he interacted with in the WWF. And your Juventud Guerrero thing, it's one of the greatest Rock lines of all time, a completely underrated. It doesn't involve pie or Smackdowns or anything, so nobody talks about it. But when Jericho showed up on Raw, The Rock said, you've been spending the last, like, 10 years wrestling guys named Juventud. It's just like, it's so vicious. Anyways, I mean, he's still like Marchand will still get his pardon the pun licks in. But I don't think he's nearly as nefarious as he used to be with the physicality.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, instead of that, he became a guy who's just going to score 40 goals every year.
Right, but he still licks people. Like, let's not act like he's suddenly transformed, and you know he's still that guy. And, right, but he's also a guy that he is a good player. He is, and you're right.
He still has that. Like he's still the guy who can pull out the big spot, like Greg said. But he, you know, he mixes that in with just being like, you know, Kenny Omega, and he's just a really good worker too. And occasionally, he's going to do a moonsault off the top rope.
Yeah, but and the other thing with this, and this relates to Tkachuk as well, and some other guys, like there is still such a thing in hockey as just having a really punchable face. Like there are guys that just have the ability to just look at you and smirk, and like you just, I mean, you're watching at home and you want to see somebody punch them, let alone you'd be actually playing against them. So, and that's, you know, I hate that this is true because I wish this didn't exist in the NHL. But it's kind of a skill almost, you know, to be able to do that. And you know, Marchand's a guy who's perfected it. He knows that he can just drive these guys crazy. And you know, obviously, you know, I don't know if Tkachuk is at that level yet, but he is with Drew Doughty, because the fact that this is ongoing, and you saw it in the game this week. I mean, these guys are able to get under the skin of people and potentially draw them into situations that otherwise they wouldn't want any part of.
What we need is for these guys to actualize on that Corey Perry level of being incredible Hart Trophy quality players, but also gigantic assholes. Like, I think Perry might have been the guy with the highest, you know, ability versus irritability ratio in the NHL at one point.
Yeah, I think that's
fair.
Because
he was an asshole.
Yeah, right. It usually is bad. The fourth liners, but these guys, maybe we're right. In this new... That's how much skill there is in the NHL now. Even the punchable faces are all skill guys now. There's just no room for the noble fourth liner anymore.
By the way, speaking of Tkachuks and punchable faces, Brady Tkachuk. Ooh, boy,
That's a really punchable face. Yeah, that's a really punchable face.
Absolutely. He will be getting there.
He kind of reminds me of like a villainous version of Jack Eichel in the way he looks. He's like an evil Jack Eichel.
So everybody said like he, you know, when he went to BU, everybody's like, oh, he plays just like his brother. He's going to be around the net 100% of the time. And I was at his first college game ever, and he ended his first shift lying on top of the goalie. And I was like, okay, I get it with this guy.
All right. The other thing that Drew Doughty said that was interesting, because, you know, it's funny when you go from bitching about a pest to then shitting all over one of your opponents. He said that he was baffled by the Norris Trophy love for Brent Burns, because if you watch Brent Burns, he gets beat like three times a game, and then kind of went into that territory of saying that the Norris Trophy shouldn't just be for the best offensive defenseman, which I think is, you know, it's funny. Like, I think, you know, his comments about Tkachuk didn't go over all that well. They were seen as whining. And then he says the Norris Trophy stuff, and I think a lot of people were like, oh, yeah, this is totally on point. There was so many people that agreed with Drew Doughty this week as far as, like, the deficiencies in the Norris Trophy. I was actually stunned by how well it went over.
Yeah, which surprised me, because
that seemed to me like that was him whining.
Yeah, right.
Cause, like, he's having a shitty season by his standards. And he's very mad that Drew Doughty that Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson in the same state as him, you know, they're getting all the love for it because they're actually having really good years. Well, Karlsson, I guess, has been hurt a lot, but.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing that struck me is like, saying that somebody annoys you or that you don't respect them, or, you know, somebody that you've actually had, you know, back and forth with on the ice is kind of one thing. Just pointing to another star player and saying like he's not as good as people think, you know, even though he did try to dress it up with, you know, he was complimentary as far as Brent Burns offensively. But to go and say that, you know, a guy gets beat three times a game, like that struck me as very odd and kind of out of nowhere. And, you know, I don't – whether it's whining or just something else or just frustration from a terrible season, like that really struck me as strange. If you got a problem with somebody, you know, one-to-one and you want to voice that, I mean, that's – I think to an extent that's fine. But to just – kind of out of nowhere, at least as far as we know, it's out of nowhere. Maybe there's something else going on here that is kind of feeding into this. But to just, you know, one star player take a run at another star player's skill level and you know, level of play, that struck me as more, much stranger and much more interesting than him just being pissed off by a guy who intentionally tries to piss him off.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is that, like, I think you're right, because I think the fact that he was snarking about an opponent and, like, completely just shitting all over, basically calling him, like, a modern-day Phil Housley, is essentially what he said. Like, it was sort of couched in the criticism of the award, when in actuality, it was very much a criticism of an opponent, which I completely agree with you.
Right.
Kind of got lost on some people. But from the award standpoint itself, like, I know that's the knock on the Norris. And I think I think the knock on the Norris has always been that it goes to a guy with a high point total as sort of an incantation against the idea that the Norris ignores true defensemen. Like, it's almost like we have to swing the other way. Like, we don't recognize the Jacob Slavins and the Mark Edward Vlasics of the world. So then we have to shit on the award for being too offensively oriented. I think the guys they pick for the most part are complete defensemen. Like, I don't think this is an award that necessarily is just like, you know, like what the Selke used to be, where it's like, who has the best faceoff percentage? Well, he's obviously the best defensive forward. I think that the people that win the Norris are actually really well-rounded. His one criticism is interesting, though, which is that if you don't play on the penalty kill, can you win the Norris? Which actually used to be a criticism that they had of Pavel Datsyuk when he wouldn't play on the PK for Detroit. But then it comes back to, can you really knock a guy for what is essentially a deployment choice by his coach?
No, and that was always the knock against Erik Karlsson. Well, he doesn't kill penalties. And it's like, right, because Erik Karlsson is more valuable to his team playing, like, getting the 2.5 minutes he would have gotten on the PK on the power player at 5-on-5.
Right.
And you know, the thing is, too, like, Drew Doughty just won a Norris a couple years ago for a season where he wasn't great, and he's never been a top five defenseman. And if you want to believe the
– Oh, come on. No, he's never been a top five defenseman. You don't think so?
No. Or maybe not. I can't remember. I did a thing when he won it, basically arguing he shouldn't have won it. And I can't remember if he was ever top three or top five. It was one of those two where I was like, well, I don't
like,
even feel
but
like...
The year he won it was the year where basically every Canadian journalist came out before the season and said, it's Drew Doughty's turn,
yeah,
Scotty.
No, that's
it's
what
Drew
I'm
Doughty's
saying.
Turn. Like, and so it became
rumor,
his turn.
The rumor at the time was that his agent may or may not have said, well, if you guys want to keep getting scoops from my office...
I have never heard that.
No,
you're saying
I've
there was
that.
A conspiracy theory?
That's the conspiracy theory, yeah.
Oh, I love that. I don't care if that's true or not. I'm buying it.
I don't remember where I heard that initially, but like someone brought it up to me in light of the Drew Doughty thing, like,
I love
this
it.
Week.
I love it. I'm down for that.
Yeah.
what
achievement award at 26. Get a fucking...
Yeah, Sean, yeah. What do you say about the Norris? Do you think they get it right most times?
I think they generally do. And it's especially these days where we now understand more about, you know, what makes a good defenseman, and that the idea of the defensive defenseman, the stay-at-home defenseman who... He doesn't score and doesn't, you know, gets 20 points a year, but is solid in his own end. We understand now that that's not a great defenseman because he's only doing half of the job. And just like you wouldn't necessarily expect a Phil Housley type to be a Norris front runner, you shouldn't expect a Rod Langway to be up there either in the modern day. And I think they generally get it pretty good. Maybe there's some examples. I think. Maybe the first time that Erik Karlsson won it, you could make the case that he wasn't a great defensive defenseman then. I think he's much better since then. I think some people have kind of refused to see the progress in his game since then. But generally speaking, I think, you know, it's not bad at getting the two-way guys. You know, we probably do still rely on the points too much for the offensive side. But I don't think, you know, I think the days of the really one-dimensional defensemen are generally ending, and certainly as far as the you know, as far as the Norris, where you look down the list of winners, you know, I think it's I don't agree with every choice they've made every year, but there's nobody right. who really jumps out at me as being somebody where you go, no, that's actually not a good defenseman because they're too one-sided.
You would know better than I. Should Paul Coffey have three Norrises? Was he a good enough all around defenseman to have three Norrises?
He was so unbelievably good offensively that I think you know, if you're going to set a minimum bar and say offensively and defensively, then maybe he didn't meet it. Although he was, you know, like a lot of offensive defensemen, he was better in his own zone than you give him credit for. He wasn't viewed that way in the day because he didn't hit, he wasn't cross checking guys in the head in front of his crease and you know, blocking 10 shots a shift because he was always in his own zone. I think under our current understanding of how the game is played, he would get a lot more respect for his defensive game for being able to be the guy who made, you know, the puck would be on his stick and would be out of the zone right away. And, you know, granted that was a little easier when you had five Hall of Famers going up the ice with you, but he was underrated defensively. At the time, he wasn't considered very good. He wouldn't have ever been considered a two-way defenseman in his era, but he was so – I mean, the guy almost scored 50 goals as a defenseman. He blew away even Bobby Orr's record. I think at some point, even if you're looking for a two-way player, you have to acknowledge if one way is just so head and shoulders above what anyone else has ever done, maybe that makes up for just being average at the other end.
Yeah.
By the way,
I think the – you know what I was going to say, the only guy that I think maybe shouldn't – I mean, like Rob Blake, maybe in 98, like Rob Blake never really struck me as being the best at what he does.
Yeah. And that was 21 years ago, right? Like, so to get it, let's say 85% right every year since then, I think that's pretty good.
It's better than we do on a lot of the awards.
Oh yeah.
Oh, for sure. Without question.
Zdeno Chara only has one fucking Norris. Are you shitting me?
Yeah,
that's crazy to me, dude.
That's partly though, like the Lidstrom thing
era, and Lidstrom definitely screwed like 42-year-old Lidstrom or whatever. Like the last year he won, Zdeno Chara should have won in a walk, but it was like the Nick Lidstrom good time retirement award. So
there was also a year where Lidstrom probably should have won, but he was a minus one, and people were like, "Oh, you can't win the fucking Norris if you're a minus one." Anyways, it's an interesting debate. The other thing that's really interesting, and I can't believe we're talking this much about the fucking Kings at this point in the season, but Ilya Kovalchuk stays home from their road trip. I don't think this is the end of Ilya Kovalchuk with the Kings because, one, they're going to have a new coach that maybe he'll like better. Two, he's got a no-move clause.
Contract.
Yeah, and three, his family lives in Beverly Hills, and like he probably doesn't want to go anywhere. Yeah. So like, I think they're stuck with him, and he's stuck vis-a-vis with the Kings. But what a, you know, of all the scenarios in which we were like, oh, this probably won't work out, leaving Ilya Kovalchuk home from a road trip was not part of that purview for me.
Yeah, it was a real surprise. Just because, like, this team sucks. Like, I can't imagine that Ilya Kovalchuk is their 13th best forward, and he's not having a particularly good year. But like, Jesus Christ!
But that is the thing, right?
He gave up eight to the Oilers. Like, come on, dude.
He's been a healthy scratch. He was a healthy scratch like three or four, I think, before. So it wasn't like they just kind of it was. What's interesting to me is that the comments that he had about Willie Desjardins, like he didn't hold back. And you talk about like Drew Doughty saying things where you go, geez, that's, you know, we're not supposed to say that. Kovalchuk did the same thing. I mean, I don't know if I'd say he ripped his coach, but he certainly was critical of his coach and he certainly deferred any opportunity to defend his coach. And then he gets left home, and I think everyone comes to the same conclusion, which is this, you know, this is a case of a guy being left behind because he goes and criticizes his coach to the media. The Kings swear up and down that that's not the case, that it's, you know, he was a healthy scratch. He was going to be a healthy scratch, so he might as well stay home. And you know, they've got him working with a skills coach, which he's 35. I don't know what new skills he's going to learn and master at this age, The good news as far as this whole situation, because you're right, he made it very clear he doesn't want to go anywhere. He's talking about how much he loves the weather. Yeah. And he doesn't want to be somewhere cold, and, you know, which it's the big problem here for him seems to be Willie Desjardins. And I have a feeling that that is not going to be a problem that's going to be ongoing for the next few years of his contract. I think we are going to have a coaching change in Los Angeles. I think is let's say more likely than not.
I it's almost like, and stop me if this sounds crazy, the whole winning a Stanley Cup thing was sort of bullshit, and he just wanted to live in Los Angeles.
That's an interesting take.
Gosh.
All right. Well, yeah, there you go. So as the Kings turn, listen, they're a horrible hockey team, but maybe you're a masochist and you just would love to watch horrible hockey. And if that's the case, there's only one way to do it, and that's with SeatGeek. Getting tickets online can be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know, hubba, 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 money, 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 who do you trust? And that is why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek puts millions of tickets in one place, so you can easily find the seats that you want for a price you're willing to pay. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything from sports to shitty LA Kings games, to concerts, to shittier LA Lakers games, to comedy, to the Dodgers, and also theater. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. I use the big green circles to figure out exactly which tickets I should buy for things. Back when I was living in New York, it was the go-to place I go for Broadway tickets, because otherwise you're going to that TKTS place in the morning with all the tourists, and then you're like, oh my God, I want to see Hamilton. They're like, we don't have Hamilton. Here's King Kong. You're like, I don't want to see King Kong. So then you go to SeatGeek and get your Hamilton tickets. That's the way it works. Best of all, listeners to Puck Soup get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the SeatGeek app today. Enter the promo code SOUP. That's S-O-U-P. That spells soup. That's promo code SOUP for $10 off your SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets for said events. You might want to also get tickets for the playoffs at some point. The playoff format debate is now reared its ugly head. Apparently, according to several reports, including, I believe, Elliot Friedman and 31 Thoughts this week, there is a chatter amongst the players being discontent with the current playoff format. Are we in the last throes of this wild card nonsense, or do you think that they're going to stick with this stuff?
Well, I mean, they're going to stick with it until the new CBA, and then they'll probably change it for the 58th time. So,
yeah, and the league will do what the league is brilliant at doing, which is getting the players to push for something that everybody wants, but it becomes something the players push for, so the players end up having to give concessions in other areas in order for the league to do what the league probably already wants to do. Like, I don't have a huge problem with the current format, and I say that as a Maple Leafs fan who's about to watch his team probably get crunched in the first round of a matchup they probably don't deserve to get that early.
Right.
You know, I still – nobody – the playoff format has never cost anyone the Stanley Cup. You still got to beat the teams you beat. It does suck to have to – you know, if you're a team that's good enough to go out in the second round, you go out in the first round, that does matter. That's it's revenue, it's experience, it's memories for your fans. And, you know, it's not ideal. At the same time, I do get that they want the rivalries. They want those recurring matchups. I don't feel strongly one way or another, other than to point out that there have always been problems with the playoff format, and none of these formats are perfect. The 1-8 is not great either. You can still have teams finish in the top 16 and miss the playoffs. You can still have teams meet earlier than they ordinarily should. I'm not sure that two great teams meeting in the second round is a terrible thing, but them meeting in the third round is somehow okay. Yeah, at the end of the day, I don't think there's a perfect way to do this. I think you're always going to have complaints, especially when it's some big market team that's being affected. So I know it's kind of the worst thing to do when you're in the take business is to say, I don't really have a particularly strong take. But I've been around long enough to know that everyone's hated pretty much every playoff format this league will ever have. They hate this one. They'll hate the next one too, I promise.
Well, the Boston Leafs thing's really interesting because we always see it from like the Leafs perspective because they're just, you know, going to get fed, like you said, fed to Boston and punched in the face and probably fold in the first round. But there's also the Boston perspective of you are demonstrably the second best team in the Eastern Conference, and you have to play the Leafs in the first round. If it was a 1-8 format like we used to have, your first round opponent would be the New York Islanders, which I think to me is a much easier opponent if you're the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs, even if you have the psychological hold on them. The interesting thing in the West is that a lot of people, myself included, point to the San Jose Vegas series and be like, ah, this sucks, you know, that these two teams have to play each other in the first round. If it was 1-8, they'd actually be seeded against each other anyway right now, if you look at it. The Sharks would be third. The Vegas Golden Knights would be sixth. There's a chance that it could be St. Louis instead of Vegas, but as of right now, it'd be Vegas. So we might be stuck with that anyway.
And that's the thing, right? Like, we, you know, everyone who points to seeding and says, well, it should be this versus this, that works on the assumption that the standings tell us who are actually the best teams. And of course, they don't, especially when you have teams that can load up at the deadline or, you know, guys who get injured or this or that. So it's, you know, I have a hard time complaining too loudly about a format that gives us San Jose versus Vegas, which is going to be an amazing series, versus giving us San Jose versus St. Louis, which nobody would really particularly care about. Should it happen in the second round instead of the first? Maybe, but both of these teams, if either one of these teams deserves to win the Pacific, they got to beat each other and show that they're better. So they get a chance to do that. I really have a hard time being too bothered by the fact that we're getting great matchups earlier.
Yeah, my thing for that is I don't know if you guys watched that San Jose Vegas game last week, but I don't know that that's going to be a particularly good series given the way Martin Jones is playing.
Right. That's a bit of an issue.
Oh man.
It's not their goaltending, their team save percentage right now is, I believe it might be a little bit,
right?
Yeah, I think the Panthers getting their asses handed to them by Montreal means that they're probably last. But like the Sharks and Panthers earlier this week were tied for the worst save percentage in the league, which is fucking incredible when you think about how good San Jose has been in every other department. It's a dereliction of duty if you're Doug Wilson. 100%. How do you not go and try to improve that position at the trade deadline when you did have the ability to do so? The rest of your team is fucking stacked, and you're going to go to war with Martin Jones and Aaron Dell just shitting their pants every two games. It's insane.
If they had any kind of goaltending from either of those two guys, they would be not right up there with the Lightning, but it would be, you know, a 7 or 8 point difference probably.
Mm-hmm.
And that's crazy. The Lightning are the best team in the history of hockey, maybe.
The Lightning have a +100 goal differential right now.
Think about that.
That's insane. That's insane. You mentioned the Lightning, and that brings us to the real criticism of the playoff format, which is this bracketing idea where, I don't know, like Gary Bettman woke up one morning and he's like, I want to make it so people can have office pools. And then all of a sudden the first seeds aren't protected in the playoffs anymore is just horseshit. Like, if I'm the Lightning, I am infuriated that my next game has to be against either the second or the fourth best team in the conference. It's insane that that's the case. And the fact that that they don't reseed and protect your top seeds completely undermines an 82 game regular season in my mind. And you should protect the teams that earned it. And the fact that they don't is insane to me.
Well, right. Thing. Oh, go ahead, Sean.
I was just going to say, I mean, you say they got to play the second or the fourth best. The fourth best team is who they should be playing. If you're the best team and it's, you know, you get to round two.
If everybody wins out.
If everybody wins out, that's who you should be playing. Right. So, I don't have your larger point, yeah, I mean, I know a lot of hockey fans. I don't know anyone who does office pools for the NHL playoffs other than filling out that one website, posting screen grabs nobody cares about, and then completely forgetting about them. So, yeah, I wouldn't miss that if we lost it.
Right.
Everybody rushes to that NHL.com bracket thing, and then like we all do it, and then we all post it on Twitter. And you're right. Yep. Nobody gives a
nobody
shit.
Nobody cares. Nobody cares about that. Nobody cares about what you got on the lottery simulator. You can just leave that out of my out of my Twitter feed. It would be fine.
I'm not going to post anything like that. I can make that guarantee.
We're going to hold that to you.
That's great. Okay. The thing I was going to say though, like it's one of those things of. The NHL, like in hockey, we are already told like you shouldn't give a shit about the regular season. You know, I remember very early on in my Puck Daddy days, I wrote a story that was basically like, we need to act like the President's Trophy is a bigger deal. And it got a shitload of comments that were just like, you don't know anything. The only thing that matters is a Stanley Cup, you know, all that yep. kind of stuff. And like... I would say that a really good chunk of, like, even people in front offices and dressing rooms around the league are probably like, yeah, who gives a shit about winning the President's Trophy? The Capitals did it a bunch, and look what happened. They lost, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you said
last week, regular season achievement should be lauded. Yeah. Like, Tampa Bay should be lauded for what they were able to accomplish this year.
100%.
Yeah, for sure. Plus 100 goal differential. I just can't get over that. They're so goddamn good.
They're good.
It's going to suck when they go out in the second round. before we get to our guest, I wanted to talk. Did you see the picture of the guy in St. Louis who sliced up his bagels this morning?
No.
Yes. All right. I did see that.
So I'll describe it to you, Ryan. Okay. So, how to put this? He had a dozen bagels, and he sliced up each bagel like it was its own loaf of bread.
No, he didn't. He couldn't have done that.
He did.
That doesn't make sense. Why would anybody do that?
He took the dozen bagels. So he's got two boxes. He wrote,
a third
"This is
of
Alex
your donut or your bagel slice thing is going to be in two different pieces." What the fuck?
Alec Krautman, who I believe works for the National, what's the NAOO? Is it the weather people?
I have no idea.
I think it's like weather people. Today I introduced my coworkers to the St. Louis secret of ordering bagels bread sliced. It was a hit. And it's like two things from Panera. First of all, come on. By the way, there is only one good bagel at Panera, and it's the Asiago cheese one. He's got two boxes of bagels, and they are all sliced like little tiny loaves of bread. So it's like a large untoasted bagel chip, I guess would be the best way to describe it.
You got it.
You get
Sean,
out of this thing.
Hold on, shut up. Sean just sent it to me. I'm furious.
I don't know. First of all, the great thing about this is that in the 5 minutes after this thing went viral, and it has gone completely viral, there's over 1,100 likes right now. It's become a thing. Everybody that I know in St. Louis was responding to me saying, like, disavowing
we
this
don't
man.
Do that.
Yeah, right? It's like, this is not who St. Louis is. But yeah, slicing each bagel individually like a loaf of bread.
I'm calling the police.
What's your proper bagel? When you order a bagel, how do you order it?
Everything with onion and chive cream cheese or something like that.
Are we your only friends?
What do you mean?
Onion and chive cream cheese with an everything bagel is a pretty pungent combination, is all.
Oh, I think it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Keep the vampires away.
That's right.
Sean, what about you? Do they have bagels in Canada, Sean, or is it just donuts?
Well, I mean, first of all, if you're asking if they have bagels in Canada, enjoy the feedback you're going to be getting from our Montreal friends. Because
Montreal has bagels, but I don't consider Montreal part of Canada. Oh, I think it's a suburb of Paris.
Now you've just opened a political minefield in a bagel conversation.
Quebec separatist movement.
Yeah. It's me.
All right.
You know me.
Okay there. We do, but here in Ottawa, it's kind of not as much a thing. I don't have strong feelings on bagels other than you shouldn't slice them sideways like a psychopath. I mean, that's the obvious take, but no, I've never, like, the different styles of bagels are kind of all seemed the same to me, but yeah, good.
I kind of fell in love with the
when Montreal gets a hold of you.
I kind of felt, I'll get to that in a second. I fell in love with a salt bagel with jalapeno cream cheese was one my jam.
That's not
when
bad.
I was in New York.
That's not bad.
Really liked it. Now listen to me. I've had Montreal bagels at both of those places you have to go to when you're in Montreal. And I'm the only thing that I don't understand is that, and this is completely a cultural bias. In New York, the bagel is full. It's like Angelina Jolie's lips. It's like a giant full bagel that you slice in half. After you've sliced it in half, you have two beautiful full halves. They're their own little sandwiches almost. Montreal bagels are really thin. Yeah. Like you can't even really slice them in half or anything. And so when I got it for the first time, and no doubt they're really tasty, I didn't know what to do condiment wise. Do you put cream cheese on top of the bagel? Do you slice the little tiny bagel with a little tiny nail file of a knife and then kind of put the cream cheese on it? Like, I don't know what the fuck to do with my condiment on a Montreal bagel.
You slice the bagel, Greg. I'm sorry that you Americans and your big fat hands can't handle the precision needed to slice a Montreal bagel, and you need giant New York bagels. But yeah, you slice it and then you spread your cream cheese or whatever else on it, and that's all that you do.
I think what I ended up doing was I ended up breaking up the bagel and then dipping it in cream cheese, almost like you would with a Auntie Anne's pretzel into the marinara sauce.
Yeah, that's what I think about. Like, that's the ideal way to have your topping on a Montreal bagel for sure. And that sucks. So New York bagel only. Come on.
I don't know. This St. Louis bagels are making a real comeback, I hear. The bread sliced St. Louis bagel. Fucking toasted ravioli, Provol pizza, and the bread sliced bagel. St. Louis, man. An ongoing argument for secession from the United States, I think, from a food perspective. Also Budweiser. Let's not forget that. Who's our guest today, Ryan?
Oh, it's Matt Porter from the Boston Globe, an old buddy of mine. And he's a relatively recent entry to the beat writing world in the NHL. I think he got the job like at the very beginning of this season. So he's a nice guy, and he is around a very interesting team at a very interesting time for them. So
you may know him as Matty Ports, on Twitter. Yeah, Matty Ports.
Matty Ports.
Good. That's a good Boston nickname, Matty Potts.
He came to see me in Quincy. We had a good talk.
All right, here's Matt.
Hey, hi. I'm Ryan Lambert. You know me from the podcast you already are listening to. This is a weird intro, and I'm here with my buddy Matt Porter from the Boston Globe, ex of what was the Miami Herald. Am I right about this?
No, Palm Beach
Palm
Post.
Palm Beach Post. I apologize.
Palm Beach Post.
I apologize.
Three listeners in South Florida are going to be really weirded out by that.
That's right. Former University of Miami beat guy.
Yeah.
Did you do just the big three, baseball, football, basketball?
I did like everything down there. Like,
really?
That was like the cool thing. Like, I got to cover LeBron being like a superhuman being with the Miami Heat. And
hell yeah.
I got to cover, like, I got to go to an industrial park where Aaron Hernandez shot a guy and like knock on doors and like, you know, say like, where were you that night? Did you hear a gunshot? And then I went to a strip club afterwards where he had gone after he shot a guy in the eye.
Oh yeah.
And then high school
story.
And then covered high school football. And like, there was just a lot of stuff. A lot of football, not a lot of hockey.
Yeah, but you covered when like the Panthers had that one season. I seem to recall you went to a handful of games back then, right?
Yeah, as many as they would let me go to. That then they had Jager being like,
oh, that's right,
an awesome like 43-year-old weirdo, and
oh, he's probably only 41 at that time.
he was incredible, and you know, like a wide-eyed like Barkov, and you know, like a younger pre-captaincy Barkov.
Huberto too, right? He was on that line. Yeah.
Yep. Fun team, like super welcoming to like, you know, happy that reporters were there, type of thing. Yeah, super nice.
By the way, I should say we're in a Mexican restaurant near my house, so
indeed.
If you are hearing people in the background or Latin music of any kind, that's why. I will try to refrain from eating the chips and salsa in front of us for the remainder of this interview.
I might not.
Who could blame me, really? They're pretty good. Pretty good. So anyway, Matt, now you, hometown boy comes back, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's weird. It's actually, it's strange, and like, gosh, you don't want to sound like humble braggy, right? But like, it's so weird that I got this job. Like, you know, I always wanted it, and I set a goal to get it, and now I have it, and I don't know. I guess it's all downhill from here, but here I am, baby. It's, yeah, back in Boston. Like, familiar faces, you know? Like, as we were discussing before, you're not a familiar face in the sense that this, I think, is the first time we've ever got a beer together.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true.
Yeah, we were in, trying to figure out when the last time we actually were in each other's presence was, I think, 2007. I'm going to say 2006
that
or 7.
Sounds about right, yeah.
At TD Garden, at a Hockey East thing, obviously. It was a college hockey experience.
Of course.
And I don't know if Lowell was involved, but
That year, I'm going to say they probably weren't.
Okay.
They were quite bad in the middle.
Yeah.
The 07 season, I think, is the one. No, that can't be right. It must have been 2005. There was a season where they won 5 games all year. And that's, like, I think maybe the benchmark for, like, how absolutely terrible they were.
Hmm.
If it was the 06-07 season, that was a year where they didn't win 20 straight games. That was my last year in college.
Fair.
So,
yeah. Fair.
Not a good team that year.
No. But I remember sitting there, you know, being like, I like the cut of this guy's jib.
Wow.
I followed you on all the social media. I think we had Twitter back then, I believe. I'm not sure. Yeah, and then have stayed in I guess, internet contact with you over the last 9 years.
Yep.
Got some killer music recs. And,
I try, man.
And now here we are.
Yep, watching the Dodgers Diamondbacks season opener.
Indeed.
Can't beat it.
Indeed.
So, Bruins, real interesting team this year.
Yeah. Real fun.
Yeah. Well, fun insofar as they're good.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, seems like there's some real good personalities in the room and that kind of thing.
Yeah, very much. There's a lot of, like... you have a mix of guys, right? Like, that's what I kind of like about it. Like, if you want to get super, like, serious and, you know, talk to guys like Chara, who's, like, you know, there's no fooling around with Zdeno Chara,
yeah.
You know? And then you, like, complete opposite end of the spectrum. Like, I'll talk to Brandon Carlo about, like, his hamster that he had, like, as a kid. And what happened to the poor hamster.
Yeah.
And, like, the other day I was in Florida and Carlo walks in wearing a beanie. It's, like, 80 degrees outside.
Yep.
And he walks in wearing a beanie and I'm like, what are you doing? And he said, and he has this real deadpan thing about him. And so you don't really never know if he's kidding or not. I guess he is. But he's like, yeah, my hair wasn't, like, flowing with me today. So I had to do something. It's just stuff you don't, like, you know. And then you go talk to Bergeron, who's like... I hate the word classy, but
yeah.
I kind of think, yeah, that's him.
Yeah. My girlfriend used to work for Microsoft, and they did some event with him, and she was, like, when we first met, like, she was like, oh, you're a hockey writer or whatever. Do you know who Patrice Bergeron is? I was like, of course I know who Patrice Bergeron is. She's like, he is the nicest guy.
Yep.
And that's been my experience as well, yeah.
He's Jean, basically, like, my understanding of it is, like, in the context of hockey history, he's Jean Beliveau. He's, like, one of those type of guys.
Yep.
Like, down the road, they're just going to be like, Bergeron, he was the best.
Yeah.
He was the classy guy. Yeah. And then, like, Jake DeBrusk.
Yeah.
Like, every interaction I've ever had with him has been great. Like, just... talking about video games, or he always says some comment on anything, basically.
Yeah.
Like, he'll roast anybody. I really appreciate that. We don't get that much these days. Like,
no,
I think
sure.
It should be stated, like, not that I ever wanted to be like one of those, like, I'm not a hockey player, like, I play hockey.
Right.
Like, for my own fun.
Yes.
But I'm not an NHL guy. I'm not one of those reporters that's going to pretend to be. So I don't want to be buddies with them. But
no,
like,
yeah.
But, you know, some kind of banter is fun. And
DeBrusk is
totally here for that.
Yeah, you need to have a good rapport with guys. And, they need to know that you're not going to, like... That they can trust you to not, like, you know, write a column saying, oh, I don't know, Tory Krug maybe isn't the reason that Power Play's any good or whatever.
Or that Patrice Bergeron is in decline, or asking the question if he's in decline.
Yeah, you love to do that shit. And then, because then you can go, well, look, I don't personally think so.
I'm just
like, you gotta ask.
You have to ask, because people are talking about that.
And it's like, well, I mean, I guess they are because he's like 32 or whatever.
Sure.
But he's got, what, 75 points this year in 60 games? Like, I think he's fine.
It's been an outstanding year, career high in points for Patrice Bergeron, still playing incredible defensive hockey. Yeah, he's been okay. I actually had an experience with something like that earlier in the year. I wrote a thing where I was like, okay, so the Oilers, this is before the Oilers went on that little mini run under Hitchcock, where they started playing good all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And then I got some blowback from Edmonton, like, you know, well, look at them now. It's like, okay, you went 6-2 in your last eight. Congratulations.
Yeah, and five of them, I'm sure, were at home, and four of them were against the Anaheim Ducks
on
or whatever.
Back-to-back, right. So, okay, fine, whatever. But, yeah, I did a thing that I was like, all right, Krug is up in 2 years. Maximizes value.
Yeah.
You know, why not Edmonton? Why not a guy like Nugent Hopkins? Like, this was so long ago that, like, you know, now if you take things change so quickly, if you take that idea right now, it looks ridiculous because of what Krug brings to the Bruins. And I wouldn't write that column today. But at the time, I was like, okay, Don Sweeney went to Edmonton and.
Right, and that kind of is a thing that you have to, like, as a person who writes about the league every once in a while, or, like, when a rumor happens, I guess I should say, of, like, Doug Armstrong was at the Ducks game.
Yeah.
Who's he maybe thinking about?
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe nobody.
Right.
And, like, maybe he went to Anaheim because, like, he can.
Yeah.
Like, and he's interested in the San Diego Gulls or something like that, and maybe that, and he's not trying to get Ryan Getzlaff for David Perron or whatever.
Right. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I feel like my whole approach to that was like, you have your idea and it's like, look, I'm reasoning it out here. Like,
yeah.
On the page. I'm not trying to say, like, because I will see some people just be like, you know, they'll source it up and be like, you know, chatter around the Oilers. No.
Just the worst, dude.
Just be upfront about your idea. Like, this is my idea as a writer. It's one man's opinion. You know, and then try to make the pieces fit on the page.
I think that's fine to do, right? I used to write a column for Puck Daddy it's not called Puck Daddy anymore, but also, like, I don't do it anymore, called Huge If True, right?
And
I would just, like, take the big trade rumor of the week or whatever, and it was never hard to find one. I should stress, like, I never really had to go digging too hard to find, like, oh, you know, Corey Perry might get traded or whatever. I don't know why I'm picking on the Ducks so much. But, they suck.
I say they were the worst team I've seen this year? Can I say that?
I mean,
because it's true. I haven't seen every game of every team, but every time I've seen the Ducks, they were the worst team I've seen.
Even the Senators, really?
Yeah, the Senators actually played hard when I saw them.
Yeah,
the Ducks,
I mean,
just,
yeah.
Man, Gibson, like, without Gibson, it was
brutal,
tough.
Yeah, but so, like, I would get that pushback sometimes from people of, like, well, you know, it was just me, you know, speculating or whatever, and it's like, first of all, no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because, again, like you said, you got to put it in the context. Like, now I'm just shooting, I'm just throwing shit at the wall here, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And often, like, the guys, like, I don't know, Bruce Garriott from Ottawa, for example, like, it's never sourced. Like, he never says, you know, multiple. It's like, it's more like, you know, like you said, people are saying that so-and-so might happen.
Could it? See, the thing with a guy like Garriott, though, it's like, and I don't want to get into, like, totally, like, talking about everybody. Like,
no, for sure.
I'm way too new at this, you know. I avoid, like, there are media beefs that I could easily get into. I'm like, I don't want any part of it, man.
Yeah, sure.
It's not my thing. But, like, you know, a guy like Bruce, you know, or like Larry Brooks or Kevin, you know, DuPont, who I work with, like, they've been around long enough. Like, they talk to
everybody.
Like,
sure.
They could write, like, you know, Kevin could do, like, a, you know, I'm just making this up here type angle.
But it's informed speculation.
Right.
Yeah, and like I'm definitely more willing to give those guys a pass. Like I just pulled Bruce because like he's a guy that like has those kind of like here's three rumors that are going around the league right now, and I'm not saying like they're bullshit. What I would say was like how realistic are they on a scale of 1 to 5, basically.
Yeah,
and like that's a different scenario, like because you know, Christ. Half the league was trying to trade Brad Marchand out of Boston for like 2 years before he became a 40-goal guy every single season.
Right.
And it was like, I mean, you know, he's probably not untouchable. So like at that time anyway.
Sure.
So a GM's taking a call, and like then you can go, oh, you know, Don Sweeney's taking calls on Brad Marchand, and everybody's like, what? And it's like, no, like somebody called and said, would you trade us Brad Marchand?
Right.
And he was like, no.
Yeah.
And that was it.
He did take a call on it. That's the thing, too. It's like, you know, I think
it's so much semantics.
I think smart hockey fans realize that, like, that's the way stuff gets done in any sports league, that, you know, you're a GM, it's your job to take calls. Like,
yeah,
it's
honestly
your job to kick shit around with other GMs constantly.
Yeah, there's basically, like, unless it's a guy on an ELC, for me, nobody's untouchable.
Sure.
Like you call me with an offer for Patrice Bergeron?
I'm going to listen.
I'll fucking listen.
Yeah, what do you got? Who do you want to trade me for Patrice Bergeron? Who is, by the way, I mean, damn, is it time to trade Patrice Bergeron?
Right, and like...
No, but
he's like 33. I also think it's a legitimate question, right? Yeah. Like, to say it isn't, but it could be soon, is like a very different thing than it might be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Sure. Which is what I was getting at with Krug. He's got 2 years left in his deal. Like, are you going to pay him and McAvoy and Carlo and, like, let's say Vaakanainen comes up and is awesome, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, like, it's the thing of...
For the record, I love Krug. I think he's been awesome.
He's great.
What he brings to that power play, and he's way better at defending than he gets credit for.
Isn't that the way with any defenseman who has 45 points or more in a season? Like, everybody's like, well, he must not play defense if he has that many points.
He got pushed off the puck by a guy that's 6'5". Oh, well, I'm surprised. He's 5'9". But
yeah,
he can play defense.
Yeah, and like you don't have to play physical to play defense. Like,
correct.
I don't know. You probably haven't been at many college hockey games or any this year, but
not this year, no.
This kid, Cale Makar, at UMass right now, the Avalanche pick. The second UMass loses, he's going to be in the Avalanche lineup the next night.
Heard big things.
Oh my God, he's incredible, right? But he's like 5'11".
Mm-hmm.
He's 19, maybe he just turned 20, so like he's slight of frame still. Yeah. But he can't play a physical game. Like, I've seen him crush a guy, but more often than not, he takes the puck away with his stick, which is what you're, I guess, supposed to do, right? And that's as valid a way to get the puck off somebody as hitting them, but everybody over the age of like 45 is like, come on, man.
Well, that's the thing too. Like, in 2019, you have to recalibrate, like, how you look at D. Like, Matt Grzelcyk is a perfect example. Like, he's one of the Bruins, like, he's hurt now, obviously, but like, he's one of the Bruins' best defensive defensemen at 5'9", 174.
Yep.
With the way he uses his stick, with just skates and positions himself, and
you have to put him in a position to succeed because he has limitations as a player. But like, if he's your fifth or sixth best defenseman, you're
fine
in pretty good
that.
Shape. Yeah,
with Kevin Miller, like, that's a good pair.
Sure,
you know, a guy who can push guys around and get mean and, you know, do all the things that Kevin Miller does.
Right. But. So you mentioned you were just on the Bruins road swing in Florida.
Yes.
How about those Tampa Bay Lightnings?
How about them?
Jeez.
They're awesome.
Like, they're so good.
It's you always, like, you and I are probably geared the same way. Like, when everyone's like, this thing's great, like, and just everybody kind of gets on that train, you kind of want to look at it and be like, all right, well.
Is it?
Is it? Yeah. Like, you know, and but you make a mistake against them,
it's in the back of your net 100% of the time. Like, it's crazy.
And it's not just against Kucherov, you know, and it's not just against Stamkos or Point, you know, like, their third and fourth
line. Sorelli's great.
Yeah.
He's like what's he got, 20 points this year?
And a guy like Killorn, like, wouldn't he be on the top line in Edmonton? Like, wouldn't Edmonton be like...
Oh, yeah, Edmonton would love, like, to have him,
oh,
for
we
sure.
Got, yeah, we got Killorn. We got to put him up there. You know, like, I think they're awesome. Like, just the way... that series, because obviously, you know, if the Bruins advance, and that is certainly no guarantee, but if they do get to the second round, you know, and they look at Tampa, and they lose again, are you going to look back as a Bruins fan and be disappointed that right. you lost to that absolute juggernaut of a team?
Right, and so the thing I was going to say, and I've been saying this for a while now, like, I don't think the Bruins are as Tampa's as sure of a thing as probably everybody else does. If they get the Leafs, it's over because the Leafs just don't have the defense or whatever. But I think the Bruins would be a real tough draw for them. I think they're the second best team in the league. Like they've got the second best record, and everybody who's any good except David Krejci has been hurt this year.
That's the thing, and you look at what that does for those guys who they've played, you know. Yep. So now if you got to call on like a Connor Clifton in game three, like he's probably going to do okay.
Right.
You know, or like a guy like Carson Kuhlman. The Bruins have played them tough. And the thing I like about the Bruins, you know, they can play different styles. They can play the classic Bruins, you know, hockey, but they can also run and gun a little bit, not to the Leafs or Lightning level, but they, you know, they can be in a 5-4 game.
Especially if Pastrnak is on that second line with Krejci.
Yeah.
You know, and like, that's one of those things
you like
where,
that alignment, too.
I mean, I guess...
Heinen can play up there. He
right,
can play
no,
the
I agree. And I guess I'm not against it, right? Mm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if it works for him, it works for him. But I'm also just like... He's had a great year, but I'm still waiting for David Krejci to turn back into David Krejci a little
bit. Are you?
Yeah, a little bit.
He's healthy, though. That's the thing that... Like,
and he's got good line mates, and that definitely helps, right?
He's had 15 wingers this year.
I know.
Like, he's had an incredible year Krejci, considering where he has been in the past few years.
Yeah, like, and so that's the thing, right? Like, he's had, what have they played, 75, 76 games now?
At this point. At this recording, yes.
Yeah, like, he's had a lot of really good games, but also, like, what we know about players... often turns out to be true in the end, right? And so, like, if he has a no-show in the playoffs, like, if he's just absolutely overmatched against Tampa, is anybody going to be surprised by that? You know what I mean? Like...
I might be.
I just feel like you can't be. And, like, that, I get why, obviously, you're saying, like, he's had such a great year. He's 34? 35 now? Like,
32.
He's only 32. He's younger than Bergeron?
Yes.
Damn. It doesn't feel that way. I don't know why.
Yeah, Bergeron...
He seems like the elder statesman.
15 years in the league for Bergeron.
Yeah, well, I remember. I went to a game his rookie season, like, you know, I was in college or whatever, and I went to a game, like, they used to have college night. Do you remember this?
I do,
you could get, like, $17 tickets.
Yep.
Oh, so good.
It was good.
And I went to some rant. I don't even remember who they played, and I just remember being like, "Who is this Bergeron kid?"
Right.
Like it was like a November game or something where I hadn't seen maybe a ton of Bruins games at that point. And I was like, "Holy shit!"
Yeah,
and he's never not been that good. Like it's incredible. What did he have? 70 points his rookie year or something?
73, I think. Wow. As a 20 or
no, he was
20. 18. He was 20 and he had 73 points.
Okay.
I know that. So
okay. Maybe I'm kind of conflating like three or four different amazing Bergeron games
great.
I saw. Yeah,
you talk to like anybody like around his 1,000th game. Like I did, you know, a lot of like background stuff on, you know, the Bergeron origin, which is you know, again, I'm new here. You know, even though I was around a decade, you know, 12 years ago and going to Bruins games and, you know, working for the Boston.com back then, so I was around a little bit and I knew enough about Bergeron, but. I mean, just everybody says the same exact thing, and it's almost like rote at this point. Like, he was just so good, and he never stopped being good. Like, we had to keep him on the team as an 18-year-old. Like, you look at, like, he was a rookie, like, every year, every league he played in. You know, like, going juniors. He spent 1 year in every league because he was just really good.
And it's incredible. Like, now knowing what we know about hockey, like... You wonder how much a guy like Patrice Bergeron slips into the second round. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be incredibly rare because he's not small.
Right.
I don't feel like he scored a ton in junior, but, like, he scored a lot.
Yeah.
And as a 17-year-old.
Yep.
And you go, like, I think teams now, like, there's no way he gets out of the top 10 with a guy with that kind of profile.
Right, because now they wouldn't be like... Yeah, you know, we like Bergeron, but we really wish he'd fight somebody, you know, just to prove that he's tough, you know. I mean, a kid like that, you want to see him be, like, whatever. Like, yeah. Now it's just different.
Yeah, no, definitely, because, like, the real only frontier that exists now of, like, we're not sure on this guy is guys who are under 5'10".
Sure.
Right? Like, even 5'10" guys, they're like, no problem. We'll take him.
Sure. But, he's 104. Like, the Panthers drafted a guy who's, like, 5'10", a Finnish kid. He's, like, 5'10", 140, maybe? Yeah. Maybe?
Was that Heponiemi? Is that...
Either him or Hoppola. They're both super skinny. Like, yeah. And they are dominating. Like, one of them's in junior in Canada and, like, put up, like, 90 assists. The other one's doing great in Finland against in that rough, rugged league.
So, I don't know. I guess, you know, you were... Like I said, you were at the game the other night. The Bruins blow, 4-1 lead? 4-2, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
And for me, that's one of those things where you're like, well, you played the Lightning.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's going to happen because the Bruins, earlier in the year, beat the shit out of Lightning a couple of times.
They got them on the back to the end of a 3-4, second of a back-to-back. The Lightning were definitely, it was like the shots were like 26-8.
Yeah.
And, you know, midway through the second period, they were obviously gassed. You know, not that that's a catch-all excuse, because, like, you know, there's some teams that do well in those situations, right?
I mean, can't imagine there are too many.
Or at least they're competitive.
But yeah.
That was just, you know, what I'm saying is the Bruins didn't take, you know, from that game, like, oh, we have their number. But they have played them tough.
Yeah.
And to see them give up that lead, like, it's surprising in one way, because you'd figure the Bruins had been playing well enough that they could, you know, sit on that lead. They've done that all year, you know, with two goal leads.
You don't think the Bruins going into the third period with a two goal lead and being like, this game's tough. Yeah, exactly. Like, even against the Lightning.
Under Cassidy, I don't know. No, I mean, he's going to make the right moves, and he's going to shorten his bench maybe. I think he's done a great job this year, by
absolutely.
The way. We're talking about, quickly, I mean, we were talking about, you know, the Pastrnak kind of switch. If that doesn't work, he has enough of a pulse of that team that he'll just switch it back or do something that works. So.
Yeah, it's nice to have the fallback position of, well, I could put the best line in hockey back together.
Right. And Jared Bednar, I wonder what his options are, you know, in Colorado.
None. He doesn't have any.
Yeah. But I mean, anyway, so, is it surprising they blew the lead? Possibly, yeah. But look at the shot Kucherov scored on.
Right.
That's an insane shot.
Right. When I write the power rankings, or the power feelings, I should say.
Yes, yes. Got to brand it properly.
That's right. Often, I will go, oh, this team was on a real heater, and then they played the Bruins, or the Leafs, or the Capitals, Flames. Or the Lightning, or the Flames, and they got killed.
Yeah.
And it's like... Yeah, sometimes you're going to play one of the five best teams in the league and they're going to kick the shit out of you.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't matter how good you are. And, you know, like you said, there can be extenuating circumstances or whatever. But, you know, sometimes a team with one really good line is going to get three goals out of that line.
It was Tuukka Rask's fault. Everybody knows this.
Yeah, that's true. They got to trade that guy. I've been saying it. And you know, because of all the good goalies in the Bruins system right now.
That's the funny. If you look at it that way, it's even funnier, right?
Right.
It's like, and then what?
Yeah, no. That's
always my argument for if somebody wants to fire a coach, and then what?
No, exactly. Like, I just wrote this week about Bruce Boudreaux, right? Like, he's basically saying to the media in Minnesota, I'm getting fired after this year. Like, that's happening.
Yeah.
And because the quote was about Ryan Donato specifically. It's like, damn, he's so good. He's going to be even better. But I won't be around for it. And it's like, that's true. You definitely won't, because they are definitely going to fire. He only has 1 year left on his contract and they're bad.
Things haven't gone well in Minnesota.
No, but like, were they supposed to go well? Like, I understand, like, they probably thought things were supposed to go well, but they shouldn't have. You know what I mean? Like, that team... And I've been saying it for years. That is the most forgettable team in hockey.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Like,
with all respect to everything, everybody who works there, they're so boring.
It's not even that they're boring.
You can't watch them.
It's not
even
that they're boring. It's not. It's just that, like, you go, well, who's their best player? And you go, is it Zach Parise? Is it Ryan Suter? Both those guys are 33, 34 years old. Yeah. And, you know, I think Zach Parise leads the team with, like, 58 points.
Okay, so what is it? Do they defend? Well, not particularly.
Well, their underlying numbers are pretty good. They just don't have the talent, man. Mm-hmm. Like that, and especially in the Central, you got to have talent.
Yes.
Because you're in there with Winnipeg, tons of talent. You're in there with Chicago, who they're bad, but they have a ton of talent, and they can beat you 5-1 any given night. You're in there with Nashville. Yeah. You're in there with Dallas, who has a bunch of talent at the top of the roster, at least. And, like, Colorado has that one line.
Yeah.
Who's Minnesota have? They don't have anybody.
Well, they have Victor Rask now.
That's true. That trade's going great for them.
Yeah.
But no, like,
and trades are hard, but yeah, that was bad.
No, and that was one of those trades where the day they made it, everybody was like, "What?
Really?
Yeah,
like straight up."
it was a classic. Okay. It's one for one. Yeah. You know.
I follow enough Carolina people like that, like, because actually, I love a lot of the Carolina people because, you know, the college football thing.
Oh,
like,
sure.
I was there a lot, and I know a lot of Canes fans as a result, and all the Canes fans were just laughing.
Yeah.
Like, it's never a good thing. It reminds me of, like, which actually wound up working out right for the Red Sox, but when they got John Lackey from the Angels and all the Angels fans were like, really?
Okay.
If you want.
Yeah.
But, you know, that wound up working out okay.
Yeah, he won a World, like, he was the number two for a team that won the World Series. Am I right about this?
I think that's right, yeah.
I don't pay attention.
Baseball season, baby.
Yeah, well, so the thing is, like, one of my favorite video games, I don't know if you're a big gamesman, like...
I'll tell you a story about that later off the air, but yes.
Okay. One of my favorite video games is just MLB The Show. Because
oh my God.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Because you can just, like, do create a player, road to the show...
Mm-hmm.
And just only play your players at bats.
Yes.
And and defensive plays and that kind of thing. And, like, it's just a really good mindless way where you can go, I can play this for 2 hours. I can play it for 15 minutes.
Yep.
And right before you got here, I ripped off, like, a series against the Yankees and then left my house.
Solid.
Right? And it's like, that, like, that's the most baseball I consume.
Fair.
Like, I love that game.
Yeah.
It's so fun. And, like, I know who guys in Major League Baseball are because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I might, like, if I go to one Red Sox game this year, I'll be shocked.
Yeah. I'm probably going to go to one Red Sox game, but that's only because I just got here again. And
yeah, sure.
I went to some Marlins games down there, but they're the Marlins, and, you know, they were never particularly interesting. And,
right.
You know, I did some college baseball, which is also very long. Yeah, baseball is pretty much out of my life now, and
yeah.
I'm okay with that. I only have so much time for sports, you know? Like, when you, and as you know, like, you know, you're so dialed into hockey for 9 months of the year, or whatever the case may be, that, like, you just gotta step back.
Yeah.
Like, video games, a buddy of mine got a deal on a PlayStation 4,
mm-hmm.
like, through his credit card company, some shit like that.
Yep.
And so he gave me his old PlayStation 4 for, like, you know, essentially, like, a few six-packs. And so I got NHL 19.
Yep.
And I was like, wow, this is sweet. I haven't played NHL since... I mean, I grew up, you know, with Genesis and Nintendo and played Blades of Steel, the whole, you know, all that, going way back, and played pretty consistently through college and then up to, like, let's say NHL 12.
Yep.
And then done, you know... I got a girlfriend who's now my wife. You know, life happens.
Rag. Okay.
Hey, yeah. I am able to be married. Go me. We got a dog. That's a brag. And then I stopped. And then, like, I picked it up again. And I'm like, this is sweet. Like, I'm going to do the thing you're talking about with the shift, you know? Like,
yep.
You can play your player's shifts.
And that's it.
I created a guy. He got drafted the Avalanche. I'm playing with Nieto and Soderberg on the third line as a right wing. It's
really?
But I'm trying real hard. And I played for 2 weeks solid, and then I was just like, this is too much hockey.
Yeah.
Like, I gotta go do something else.
Yeah, I haven't played one of those, because the thing you said about, like, going from 12 to 19, it's the same game,
it
right?
Kinda
it
is.
Really
yeah.
is. And that's a bummer to me. Like,
no.
Like, I mean, I know, I guess the show hasn't really changed a ton, but also, like in much the same way, stats apply to baseball or
yes.
whatever. Baseball's the same.
Yeah.
Like, the show isn't fundamentally different from RBI baseball. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But NHL 19 should be fundamentally different
yes.
from NHL 07. And it isn't.
It's basically NHL 07, but now you can, like, play online, which
yeah.
is, like...
horrible. They're a terrible experience.
Like, I haven't even done it. Like, I'm sure it's...
It sucks, I bet.
Is it?
No, I don't do it either. I honestly, I I got a free copy of NHL 17 or 18, whatever the one with McDavid on the cover, must have been 18 then.
Okay.
And I played it for a little while, and I was like, well, this sucks. like my guy has...
You didn't buy, like, a hoodie for your creative player in, like, the NHL store? Like, no. That's a thing you can do.
Cool.
Yeah.
No, like, it was a thing of, like, my guy has a goal and two assists, two goals and assists every single game. I started, because I do like the feature of you can start in junior.
Yeah.
You know? And so I started playing for, I don't know, let's say the Quebec Ramparts or something. And I was like, oh, I like this feature. My guy has a goal and two assists. He's in the top prospects game. And, like, you get a text from your agent in the game.
Oh, yeah, right.
And he goes, looks like you're a late second round pick right now. And it's like, I have 80 more points than the second highest scoring guy in the QMJHL, and he's on my line. Like,
because you didn't fight anybody. All the old hockey guys are like,
to bring
not,
it full circle.
They're not happy about that.
Yeah, we're over half an hour here. I feel like that's a good amount.
That works for me.
Great. Okay, well, it's Matt Porter. He's from Boston Globe. You can read his stuff, bostonglobe.com. Pretty good subscription deal over there. I think like 99 cents for your first month or three.
You can get in there pretty cheaply and like see, you know, if you want to stick around, go ahead, do it. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, Matt's good. They got good coverage of all. I really like the Celtics coverage. That's the other sport I watch. I go to a lot.
Himmelsbach is outstanding.
Himmelsbach is so good.
Super
dude.
Creative, really plugged in.
Big fan.
Yeah, great guy to hang out with. And, if you like the Patriots, they got some great stuff, too. Plus, like, you know, there's, like, the news. Like, we do news, too, right?
Real
like,
good.
You know, like, that's, like, important stuff.
I have problems with your editorial page, but we can save that for another.
We can, yeah. We'll talk about that off.
Okay. Well, anyhow, that's Matt. I'm Ryan. See you.
All right. Our thanks to Matty Poitz, Matt Porter, for joining us on Puck Soup this week. Let's talk a bit about a little bit of a serious topic, concussions. There's an ongoing athletic series this week on concussions. Some really interesting stuff. Burnside did a long read on Sidney Crosby's road back from his injuries. And then, Sean, you wrote a very impassioned piece that I think is salient to hockey fans of a certain age about cheering on fighting and rough stuff that back in the day was laudable. And now through a different lens, we kind of are wondering whether we were encouraging the ruining of lives without really understanding it, which I thought was an interesting point. The only thing about your piece that I found, and to be honest with you, a little frustrating was you kind of like hand waved away the personal responsibility of the players that were engaging in this stuff. Like it was almost, I know that wasn't the point of the piece, but that was always sort of for me, the toughest part, which is that if they willfully were engaging in this, you know, how guilty should I feel about it? Right. How did you wrestle with that?
That is part of it. The piece and I would encourage people to go and read it if they haven't, largely because I'm not going to be able to do it justice, sort of just talking about it informally on the podcast. It was something I spent a lot of time putting together and thinking about. The personal responsibility is part of it to an extent. I think you can only have personal responsibility if you've got good information, and clearly a lot of these guys did not, because they weren't told that, hey, when you go out there and get your bell rung, that could actually be a something that affects you for the rest of your life. And that is something that when you're retired, you may have your personality might change, or you might still be dealing with issues. You might, it can impact not just your health, but your personal life and everything that goes with it. Obviously, the response to that is that they weren't told that because maybe nobody knew at the time, and how much should we have known, and what kind of questions should we have asked? I don't know the answers to that. You know, I wasn't in those. I don't know what the doctors knew or what the doctors said or what responsibility the coaches had or the players. I can only come at this from the fan's perspective, and I know that as a fan, I spent a huge portion of my life standing and cheering as these guys bash each other's heads in. I have all the Don Cherry videos. I traded the fight tapes. back when that was a thing. And I'm kind of left sitting here now going back through, you know, occasionally, you know, finding stuff I had as a kid and, you know, all of these tough guys that I looked up to and thought were just the greatest. And, you know, a lot of these guys are dead now. And a lot of the ones that aren't are wrestling with really serious issues. And I have a very hard time reconciling the fact that I was cheering all of this stuff on. And when I say I have a tough time, I really do mean I have a tough time. Like, if people have read the piece, it's not something where I wrap it up with an answer, because I don't have an answer. If in a way, maybe if I could say, you know what, I'm responsible for this. I'm guilty. I should feel guilty. And, you know, that would be an easier answer versus where I'm at, which is I'm still not sure, because, you know, we as fans, I think it's fair to some extent to say that, hey, if the trainer didn't know what was happening to these guys, then how the hell were we supposed to know? And what were we supposed to do other than cheer for what the league put in front of us and marketed? The flip side of that is that the league marketed it because we were cheering it. And, you know, you could draw a pretty straight line from those cheers to what a lot of these guys are facing right now. So I don't know the answer. You know, I can tell you I have heard from, you know, some people who are much closer to the situation since that post went up. And they've shared some of their thoughts. And that's kind of helped me put some of my thoughts.
What are some of those thoughts that you've heard?
I'll keep those private, I think, because they weren't intended to be shared publicly, other than, you know, some people have echoed some of the things I said and some people have added to them. And also some people who, some people have just reached out to express that they appreciated hearing that perspective from a fan. And that they have felt like that was missing, and that maybe they would have appreciated that at other points in their journeys to know that that those thoughts were out there. And I think they are. You know, I know when I wrote it, there's 200 comments under the piece now, and it's not 200 people writing one line saying nice post. It's people writing paragraph after paragraph of their own thoughts and their own experiences and kind of wrestling with it. And some agree and some don't. Some are pushing back. Some are saying, you know, I don't feel guilt because these guys made millions of dollars to do this, and they should have known to some extent what they were getting into. So I don't know. I wish, like I say, I spent a long time on this. I wish I could have wrapped it up more neatly than I did, but I feel like in a way it would have been a little bit dishonest to where I'm at to try to put a bow on it, because I'm still not sure I'm any closer to figuring this stuff out.
So I just want to say, to like Greg's point about these guys have a personal responsibility, like, are we mad at like coal miners for doing what they do? Because we've known about like black lung for a very long time, right? Or are we mad at football players? Or are we saying, like, you know, this is what they signed up for with football and professional wrestling, which we're all fans of? Like, you know, people go where like they feel like they're going to be able to provide best for themselves and their families, right? Like, mm-hmm. and the issue is that, you know, these guys who, you know, their only option to stay in the league or even the AHL was to fight. And they, because of, you know, the way junior hockey is set up and college hockey, like, you maybe don't have a lot of options other than being the guy who plays 5 minutes a night and beats the shit out of somebody.
Right.
And so I really struggle with putting a lot of like personal, like, yeah, they knew what they were getting into to some extent, and maybe not as much as they should have or could have, but like nobody entered into it going, you know, I bet it's like fine to just get punched in the face a lot every night. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So on that level, I do get the argument, but like, you know, it's the system's fault, and they, you know, like they were just kind of cogs in the machine of that system.
Yeah,
I struggle with that, man.
And I'm not trying to be Pollyanna about it. Like, I'm really fascinated by the lawsuit that the Devils are facing and Lou Lamoriello is facing from Mike Peluso, in the sense of like you know, the guys that were sent back out there, despite the fact that they were completely wrecked, just because that's their role, and people who should have known better were maybe potentially misleading them. Like, I think that was a huge problem back in the day. But, you know, to your point, though, Ryan, like, I've had so many guys that are now retired, and some of them, you know, are a little messed up, and some of them, thank God, aren't. That said, you know, I wouldn't have traded it for anything. Like, my entry point into becoming the thing I wanted to be ever since I was a kid was fighting people. And that's the way the league worked, and that was how my ticket got punched. And if it wasn't for fighting, I wouldn't have been in the NHL. And there's enough, you know, it's tough when you talk to those guys about that trade-off and about their willingness to trade off the potential health risks for the opportunity to be a pro and make that money and call yourself a hockey player on a professional basis. It's tough to talk to those guys and then come back and sort of, you know, bemoan the fact that we cheer them on when they've made that choice. I don't know. It's something I've always struggled with, especially with what we know now as far as the health goes. But I thought Sean's piece was really good, and you should definitely check it out. But one of the reasons we wanted to bring this up was also the thing that happened this week with Paul Byron of the Montreal Canadiens answering the code, as it were. Mm-hmm. Who was the cat on the Panthers he fought? Mackenzie
Weegar.
Weegar, yeah.
Yeah, so okay.
So the same guy, yeah, Weegar, that he right. had, that Paul Byron had taken a suspension for hitting several months ago. So, I mean, that's
right.
the background.
So he
there.
Answers...
I forgot about that.
So that's why they fought. Like, he answered the code. Like, he wanted to get his comeuppance, and they had their fight. And then Byron gets concussed, and it's a big deal because he's a pretty important part of a team that is currently very much in a playoff struggle.
Yeah, and has their most important game of the year coming up tomorrow, Thursday night.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
They've got almost a playoff game against the Blue Jackets, and they may be missing one of their best players because he answered the code by fighting a guy 40 pounds heavier than he was, who, you know, was... I'm sure he didn't go into it thinking he was going to get a concussion, but it certainly wasn't an unlikely result when you look at the two guys.
Mm-hmm. And so Pierre LeBrun had a thing on The Athletic today about J.P. Barry, his agent, Byron's agent, reached out and kind of slammed the code, said it wasn't a hockey fight. Paul knew he had to deal with it then or likely later. Paul probably gives up 5 inches and 50 pounds to a very tough player. How is that the code? On and on and on about it. The code does seem pretty archaic in 2019, but clearly does sort of exist. I don't know. It's definitely still part of the game that if you injure a guy, he gets to get his shot in at you. Should the size difference of these players matter when it comes to that sort of comeuppance?
Well, I mean, maybe. Maybe not. I think certainly, I'd say a couple things here. I think this whole situation puts Paul Byron in a almost impossible scenario because he knows what's coming. He knows the invitation is coming. He doesn't necessarily know what might be coming if he turns down the invitation, but he clearly chose to go ahead. And if people haven't seen it, like it's he didn't get jumped. It wasn't a situation where he got suckered or anything like that. It was, you know, the invitation was put out there, and it was a fair fight in the sense of two guys both knew what they were getting into. You know, the argument is, and this is coming from his agent, Barry, who I think makes a pretty reasonable point where he says player safety already gave this guy 3 games. So, you know, shouldn't that be the code? The code is, you know, well, you hit a guy, you got to pay for it. He did pay for it. He sat out 3 games. That should be enough. And basically saying the Department of Player Safety should be the code, not the players on the ice, months later. The part that gets me here is, I mean, again, this is an important player. It's your most important game of the season coming up. And you do something like this. I don't know that I blame Paul Byron. Like, I feel that would be a strong way to put it, but he made a bad decision. And I think that part of this, you know, frankly, is Claude Julien should have pulled him aside and said, you are not fighting this guy tonight. We've got too much on the line. You know the invitation is coming. I am telling you, you are not to fight this guy. And if he asks, you tell him, my coach said I can't go. And if you got to deal with it still, you know, next season or whatever, we'll cross that bridge then. And Claude Julien was asked about it and basically sort of waved it off and said that no, he didn't consider it, and he didn't talk to the player about it. And, you know, hopefully he's okay. As the point we're recording this, I haven't seen anything about whether he'll play or not. Maybe he does. Hopefully he plays Thursday night and you know, we forget about this. But I think there has to be a responsibility from either a coach or the leaders in the room to say, look, you don't have to answer the code tonight because you're too important to this team and we're not doing this now.
Right. All right. Well, listen, if you don't like fighting, you're watching a game, you know what you could do? Just change the channel. But how are you going to do that if you have remote control clutter? And that's why, in the greatest transition of all time, you need Control Center for Cavo. Control Center from Cavo simplifies your home theater so you can control everything connected to your TV with one easy-to-use remote with voice control. Plug in your streamer, your sound system, your cable, your satellite, even your game console, and Control Center does it all. Don't waste your time fiddling with different remotes or weeding through messy search results to get the content you want. One universal voice remote controls it all. So just say what you want to watch and let Control Center handle the rest. In fact, you can enjoy every second of couch time and easily switch between content without moving a muscle. Let Control Center from Cavo take your at-home entertainment experience from stressful to simple and enjoy what you want when you want it with ease. It's pretty great because, like, I'm in cord cutter land right now with the Apple TV and with the Switch. I got the PlayStation View that I'm using. I got the Roku. I got the whole thing. Having one remote to control everything would be pretty good. Shop now and get 40% off Control Center with promo code SOUP. That's S-O-U-P. That spells soup. That's $59.95, 40% off of regular pricing of $99.95. The math checks out. Service plan required. First 45 days free. Control Center is available at C-A-A-V-O, Cavo.com and Best Buy. Control Center by Cavo, C-A-A-V-O, one remote that does it all. This week, Ryan Lambert does it all. He does interviews and he writes quizzes. Apparently, it's time for Sean and I to be subjected to a Puck Soup quiz, courtesy of Quizmaster Lambert.
That's right. And given that I'm me and it's the start of the college hockey NCAA tournament, that's what the quiz is about this week. Both of you will get 5 questions. And because I know that I am a freak who likes college hockey and very few other people do, these are all either-or questions. So A or B, you don't have to think about it too much. But it's about the history of college hockey. It's about the present of college hockey. And, yeah, I think it's pretty – and also, obviously, how it ties in with the NHL a lot of the time. So. Okay.
So this is American colleges, right? Like NCAA colleges?
Yeah, and Division I only.
Okay, this is not your – we're not going to be talking about any Canadian colleges here.
No. Simon Fraser will not come up. Wisconsin Stevens Point, not going to be in there. Congratulations to the Division III national champion. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin Stevens Point, I don't know.
Right.
Wait, are you telling me that my – experience, my years of experience covering the Carlton Ravens when they weren't even playing intramural hockey and they played in a local rec league and I had to go cover the Carlton Ravens versus Frisbee Tire on a Tuesday
Hell
night,
yeah.
That is not going to come in handy?
No.
Damn it.
Maybe their famous rivalry with Wilfrid Laurier University.
Now, this is frustrating because I spent most of the morning studying the athletic history of the Maritime College of Forest Technology in New Brunswick.
Sure, yeah.
And apparently that's not part of the quiz, so no, I'm a little pissed off about that.
It's not going to come up, unfortunately.
All right, hit us with your best shots.
All right, first question's for Sean.
Oh,
and again, 5 questions, whoever gets the most right.
This is going to be the dead puck era of puck soup quizzes.
You're going to hear this question and you're going to see the level of how dumbing it down I have done for you.
Okay.
What's great? Okay, there are 60 teams in Division I college hockey. Which is greater, the number of teams that are named the Bulldogs or the number of teams that are named the Huskies?
Oh, wow.
Ooh, boy. I'm gonna go Bulldogs. That seems more like.
Ooh, sorry, Sean.
Dumb it down
three
further,
teams
Ryan.
Are named, three teams are named the Bulldogs: Minnesota Duluth, Yale, and Ferris State. Four teams are named the Huskies: UConn, Michigan Tech, St. Cloud, and Northeastern.
Wow, that's not even counting.
I forgot about St. Cloud. That was my problem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there it is.
Well, they're going to probably win the national title this year, so.
Charlie St. Cloud, Zac Efron.
That's right. Greg, your first question. Which team has more alumni in the NHL this season? And they can be guys who have only played one game. And this is as of this recording. Obviously, more college guys are getting signed all the time, and
okay.
The number will go up. But
right.
Boston College or Boston University?
Boston University.
That is incorrect. Oh, Boston Jesus College God, has 21. BU has 19.
Mm.
And Ryan could name them all off the top of his head if we asked.
Jack Eichel should count twice. That's my opinion.
Okay, that gets him to 20 and they're still not there.
All right, so tied goose.
Tied at zeros here. Sean, your second question here. You might not know this. Not every team in college hockey plays on an NHL-size rink. Uh-huh. Some play on an international rink. Some play on 200 by 90. Some play on 200 by 98. It's very strange. How many teams have non-NHL-size rinks? Is it more or less than 20?
Mm.
20 of the, you said 60 teams?
60. That's
I'm
going to
say more. They're more than 20.
Ooh, less. It's 16.
Wow. Jeez. You know, that's a tricky one because I was trying to play what's the quizmaster thinking with this question.
Yeah.
Like, what would be the sense of saying less? Like, the big wow moment would be like, more. I'm with you, Sean.
Well,
I would have answered the same way.
16 is a crazy number. 16 to me is a lot still.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, maybe I shouldn't try to get into the mind of Ryan Lambert. Maybe it's a place I don't want to be.
Yeah, that's true. Greg, is the single season record for college hockey points by a skater, is the single season record more or less than 100?
It's got to be less.
It's more.
Oh, Jesus.
1987, Tony Herkus had 116 points in 48 games.
Was he with Notre Dame?
North Dakota.
Goddamn. All right. So we're
still
deadlocked.
You have a good tiebreaker for this because this was.
Okay. Sean, this one I feel very confident. This one I wrote specifically for you here. Is the number of former college hockey players who have played for the Toronto Maple Leafs this season more or less than four?
Played for the Toronto Maple Leafs this season.
Wow.
Or less.
College.
And four. These I could name off the top of my head. These five I could tell you.
Sure
is,
you
is
could.
Is Tyler Bozak still technically a Leaf?
See, that's...
No, he's on the St. Louis Blues. Do you know about this?
I wish he was. Back then, see, this would have been an easy question like a few years ago because that was when the Leafs had no draft picks and they would just randomly sign like...
They signed everybody
Christian
out of college.
Christian Hansen type prospect who could barely even skate. And they would then, be sold as great prospects. Oh, boy. Okay, I'm thinking now, and I know this is the wrong way to think about it, but they don't have that many American players, and I feel like that the Americans are more likely. And Austin Matthews didn't, so he was development program. I'm gonna say less.
It's five.
No.
All right. Who are they?
Jake Gardner.
Yeah, Gardner was the
Jake Gardner.
One I could definitely get out of five. All right.
Ron Hainsey.
Oh, right.
Went to UMass Lowell, fine institution.
Well, like in the 70s, that doesn't count.
Zach Hyman.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And then two that Justin Hole, only really coming up these days because he's a figure of some controversy, because Mike Babcock refuses to play him. And Trevor Moore. Those are your five.
Yeah, Trevor Moore. There you go.
All right.
All right, okay. So this is still anybody's ball
over. We're over here. Greg, I'm going to put the over-under on the number of college hockey players who are in the Hockey Hall of Fame as men or women, as players and not builders, at 16.5. Are you taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the over, baby.
You are correct.
Yes! No time for losers, because I am the champion.
So the reason that I put the over-under at 16.5 is because there are 16 men and 2 women.
Wow.
Okay.
There you go.
So, all right. There you have it.
Okay. One of these coin flips, Sean. The pressure's all on you.
That's right. Okay, Sean, if you didn't get the last one, you're almost certainly not going to get this one. But if you use the same logic that you thought about for the Leafs a few years ago, you might get it. Which NHL team has used the most former college players this season?
All right. The most former college players this season.
And you know what? I'll actually say, give me one of the top three.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
Because it's not an either-or question.
Right. Oh, yeah. So. This is not – I'm, like, having to
– So, yeah.
Okay.
Any of the top three. Okay. Any one of them.
So, without giving an answer, let me kind of walk you through my logic here.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm going to –
Millionaire.
I'm going to just start saying team names and hope that I can get you to like Twitch or, you know, in some way.
Twitch
giveaway.
Or cough or something. Okay.
Turn my back to the camera here.
See, I'm trying to think about teams that sign a lot of college free agents, which is probably not the right way to do it because that's, I mean, that you get at most one or two guys and, you can be drafting all these guys. All right. I'm going to say the New York Rangers.
Hold, can I guess? Can I guess one?
Greg, you can guess.
You can.
Okay, I was going to say that Chicago would be one of them.
You're
that
both
was
wrong.
One of the other two I was thinking.
God,
okay.
Jesus.
Did I close the window? I closed the window, so I don't have it in front of me anymore. But the top three. The top three are Anaheim with 21.
Wow.
Yeah. New Jersey with 20. And Minnesota with 19.
Okay. Yeah, Minnesota,
New Jersey
maybe
and
I
Minnesota
thought,
are
but...
two traditionally they just sign one or two every year. So that's why I figured you might get that.
But those are
Anaheim,
higher numbers than I thought. I would have. That's
yeah. Ray Shiro's got a real American player boner too. That makes a lot of sense.
He does. He does. Yeah. So okay, Sean, still 0-for. Greg, you have one.
I feel like Greg should lose half a point because he tried to answer mine. And failed.
Didn't get it right.
Not that that half point is going to matter much because
it's the reaching over to your plate and stealing your fries of trivia questions.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It, Greg, is the percentage of players in the NHL this season who played college hockey and have at least one game in the NHL more or less than 30?
So this is the percentage we're looking for.
Yes.
This is key. This is like we're in the shootout, and one more goal would clinch it. I think
that's
me,
true. If so if you get this right, I don't have to answer another question.
I'm going to say it is thinking about where all these guys come from, Canadian junior players from overseas. I'm going to say less than 30.
It's a little over 31.
Motherfucker.
And again, that number will go up as the year goes on and all these college free agents
See,
or draft
that's
picks
where
are
I
signing.
Should have thought about who's asking the question. Of course you're going to self-aggrandize the American
that's
experience
right.
in hockey.
Yeah, you fucked up.
I fucked up. You're right. I did.
All right, Sean, here we go.
Okay. Oh, God.
The over-under on former college players who are now NHL GMs is 5.5. Are you taking the over or the under?
Oh, boy. 5.5 Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? These college boys, I tell you, I'm going to go over. I think it's 6.
Ooh, it's 7. You're correct.
Wow. All right. I got it right.
There you go.
So I knew 6 off the top of my head, and then when I looked it up today, I totally forgot Jarmo Kekäläinen played for Clarkson.
Holy shit. Wow. Do you think that's why he made the Clarkson trade?
Yes, maybe. I do think that.
Maybe.
But yeah, I totally forgot that was true, but it definitely, like, because you wouldn't think, because he's Finnish or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Chuck Fletcher, right? Harvard.
No. Right.
Don Sweeney, Harvard. Jason Botterill, I believe, played for Michigan.
Yeah, Botterill was definitely a college guy.
Well, no, I know he was a college guy. I'm pretty sure. It's either Michigan or Minnesota, but I'm pretty sure it's Michigan. Paul Fenton played for BU. George McPhee played for Bowling Green. And Ray Shiro, of course, played for St. Lawrence.
Botterill is a college guy in the sense that I could see him holding a beer koozie and playing cornhole outside of a frat house. He looks one of those types.
He does.
Let me just ask this. Greg would probably know this. Did Lamoriello never play, even at college? Was he not?
Lou Lamoriello was actually born looking exactly like Lou Lamoriello does now, so he never played.
I think he's never been young. I'm pretty sure he didn't play for. I mean, he was like the coach at Providence, but I don't think he
came
played
from the college ranks. But yeah, he was already 70 back then. So
he's like, he was like a 14-year-old in the American Development Program.
Era, I do not want to play. Era, I will manage.
He might have played D3 or something, but I don't think so. Right. Anyway, Greg, last one. Here we go.
For the win.
Does the NCAA this season have a higher or lower average save percentage than the NHL?
All right. So it's got to be higher. The NHL's average save percentage is dog shit this year because we're over 3 goals a game.
It's lower.
God damn.
It's 9-10 in the NHL. It's gone up a little bit in the last couple of weeks here.
Mm. Oh, well, that's why I got it wrong, obviously.
Well, no, it's 9-06 in NCAA. So even at its lowest point earlier in the season, it wasn't as bad.
Do you have a tiebreaker?
Yep, I certainly do. This is going to be Price is Right rule. No, I guess we'll just go closest. Jerry York, Boston College coach and lightning rod of controversy these days, Jerry York has the record for the most wins as a college coach ever.
Mm.
He started his career in 1972 at Clarkson.
Mm-hmm.
He might have coached Jarmo Kekäläinen, now that I say that. Then he moved to Bowling Green, and then he went back to his alma mater, BC, where he's been since 94, I want to say.
Okay.
And so, how many wins does the winningest coach in the history of college hockey have?
Okay. I'll go first.
Yes. Yes, you will.
Can we put a rule on this that he can't say one more than me? Can there be a cushion here, since I am going first?
Sure. Yeah.
It has to be at least 30 more than my guess. His guess.
Sure.
No, I don't. I will not agree to that. It can be two. It can be two more.
All right. I'll go 750.
Okay, 750.
All right. I think it's significantly more than that. That it feels like if this guy has been coaching that long, and given my very rough knowledge of how many games, I'm gonna say higher. I'll be nice. What did you say, Greg? 750?
Yeah,
I will say 850.
Okay,
850. Well, Sean is correct.
Oh.
Well, correct-er.
I'll take it.
Jerry York's career win total, 1,067, I would think untouchable record.
It would agree with that. Well, this puts Sean's record in quizzes at 2-0, I think, if memory serves. I'm in awe of this, really.
No, you're like in a movie quiz.
Mm-hmm. And then you beat me in a quiz about Americans.
Yeah, about Americans, yeah. So, yeah. What's
Sean,
next?
If
Bring
I
it
may
on.
Be so, if I may be so bold, you're the Jerry York of Puck Soup Quizzes.
I might be.
To use a recent example.
Next week, bagels.
All right. before we get to our question of the week, real quick, any thoughts on Luongo probably retiring?
It's a bummer, dude.
Yeah, yep. Isn't it, though?
It's especially
like
since
he's just one of those guys you don't want him to ever not be in hockey.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, we should clarify, he won't retire. He'll just kind of disappear
and go on
long-term injured reserve. Because if he does retire, and this is where it gets interesting, if he actually retired, the Canucks and the Panthers, but especially the Canucks, get hit with that stupid cap recapture rule. Mm-hmm. So they need him to not do that. But he made it pretty clear this week he's not looking to go anywhere else. And when the Panthers have all but hung a Sergei Bobrovsky poster outside of the arena for next year, the writing's pretty much on the wall. So it's unfortunate. I will miss him as a player and as a personality. The long-term injured reserve loophole sucks, but it sucks for all the teams equally, so we won't complain about it. And anyone who says that he's not a Hall of Famer is out of their mind, and I will fight you.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
Sure. All right, well, there you go. I agree. Sad that he's going, but man, what an awesome career. And I'm happy that it ends in Florida, that it's not going to be some weird-ass Mike Modano-esque, I'm going to wear an awful jersey.
Yeah, he plays for the Wild the next 3 years.
Yeah, and he's got like
an
820 save percentage because he's fucking 50 years old now. The question of the week was, who is your team's scapegoat this season, logical or not? Trent Lyth writes in, on the ice, it was good Branson, and now the focus has moved to Louis Erickson, off the ice, Jim Benning. Ryan Sklors writes in, as a Wild fan, Victor Rask's career is our scapegoat for showing promise early on, earning the contract that he has, and then forcing the Canes to trade him due to that contract and level of play. Now we are minus Nino and stuck with Rask for another year. Annabella writes in, Babcock, his deployment techniques are the least logical thing in the world. Pete Williams says, Jared Bednar for the Avs, he just stands there like he's waiting at the DMV. Way to coach, dude. Wow.
Damn.
Dalton Fry writes in, if Detroit doesn't win the lottery, it's Dylan Larkin. He was the only player keeping Detroit from completely bottoming it out and out-tanking Ottawa, which was about the best-case outcome of the season. Jake C. says, it was Jack Johnson, and now it's Phil Kessel. Ooh, hot take.
Jeez.
Ooh. I know, right? And then Royce the Voice says Tyler Seguin and his desire to only hit posts. And then finally, New Music Michael says the water for the Oilers. Oh, and of course, Tobias Reeder, apparently. The impetus for this question. Bob Nicholson torching Tobias Reeder as the sole
of
reason.
All the guys you got to go after.
Yeah, right,
Toby exactly. Reeder, number one with a bullet.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the podcast. This has been Puck Soup for this week. I'm Greg Wyshynski, and you can find myself at ESPN. Check out our Stanley Cup Madness tournament that's going on this week, where you can vote on the best Stanley Cup winner of the last 16 years. And you can find my stuff at Wyshynski, Wyshynski on Twitter.
I'm on sports.yahoo.com/author/Ryan-Lambert. And that's me. You also should sign up for the Puck Soup mailbag newsletter.
Patreon.
I mean, Patreon.
Yeah, there it is.
The newsletter on the Patreon. I write, just something every week about hockey, about music, movies, that kind of thing. And people seem to like it, so I'll keep doing it.
You can find me on Twitter, all the usual spots, at The Athletic. You can check out my work there, including this week's concussion piece that we talked about, and a bunch of other really good concussion pieces. It's kind of concussion week, so they're doing a deeper dive into that situation, and so there's a lot of really good stuff there to check out.
There you go. All right. Sean and I did a bonus podcast for the listener's choice. It was the worst regular season collapses in NHL history. It was a really fun one. So do check that out and check out the mailbag on the Patreon. $5 a month gets you six things. And then, of course, $8 a month gets you Ryan's newsletter on top of everything else. So do check that out. And thanks for supporting the podcast. If you like the podcast, go to iTunes and leave a review. It helps people discover the podcast. If you don't like the podcast, go to Reddit and complain about how we talk about more wrestling than the Lightning. That seems to be the move du jour. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Today's episode of Puck Soup has been sponsored by Kavo. Clean up your remote control clutter with Control Center by Kavo. Plug in your streaming device, your sound system, your cable, your satellite, or your game console, and control everything connected to your TV with one easy-to-use voice-controlled remote. Shop now and get 40% off Control Center with promo code SOUP. That's $59.95, 40% off regular pricing of $99.95. Service plan is required. First 45 days are free. Control Center is available at CAAVO, that's Kavo.com, and at Best Buy. Control Center by Kavo. Remember, 40% off with promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P. One remote that does it all. Visit CAAVO.com.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got spoiler commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.